It's Thursday, July 14th, 2005. I'm Alan Joyce, and this is the Everything Digital Podcast.
Podcasting almost live.
The Everything Digital Podcast. If it's digital, you're going to hear about it. Unless it's Windows.
All right, it's the Everything Digital Podcast. And this intro music is by, guess who? It's by me. I was messing around in GarageBand, playing around with the built-in loops, and just seeing what I could do, and came up with this intro music for this show. So, thought I'd go ahead and use it. I try not to keep a regular intro music, so this will just be for this show. I try to keep varying intro music and different PodSafe music and stuff just to keep it interesting, keep it different each show as far as the music goes. But I do have plenty of news for you, plenty of news that popped up in the last week, even though it was a relatively slow news week. There was some interesting stuff that happened, and let's start it off with those five-second news headlines. Alright, Microsoft is warning of three new security flaws in Windows and Word, which, although dangerous, can be fixed with newly released patches. Samsung and LG have announced that they will be releasing new handsets with built-in Wi-Fi capability for both cellular and voice over IP calls. The Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers recently approved the .mobi domain for sites designed for mobile users. And Yahoo and Cisco have introduced the Domain Keys Identified Mail Specification, a combination of both companies' anti-spam technologies. And lastly, a new Firefox update, version 1.0.5, has been released to patch at least a dozen bugs previously posing security threats to the web browser. And those are just the short headlines. As always, there are links to the full stories in the show notes at everythingdigital.org. All right, so let's get things started here with the announcement that IBM is going to release dual-core PowerPC chips, and not only dual-core, but also low-power PowerPC chips. So the chip they're working off here is the PowerPC 970FX. They're releasing some sort of modified versions of that chip. The first one is going to be called the PowerPC 970MP, and is going to be dual-core, the first PowerPC chip to go dual-core. And is going to be based on the PowerPC 970FX, as I said, which is currently used in the PowerMac G5 lineup. It can apparently run at speeds as high as 2.5 GHz. That's about the same as the current G5 chips, so that's not a big difference. However, since they are dual-core, that's almost the equivalent of a dual processor, although it's not actually a separate processor. It's two cores in a single processor. However, you could have those dual-core processors. You could have two of those in a standard G5. So you could have a G5 desktop with dual processors that are each dual-core. So that could be pretty amazing, although Apple has obviously switched to Intel, leaves some speculation as to what they're going to do about these new chips that are coming out. Also, the low-power PowerPC 970FX is supposed to run at speeds up to 2.7 GHz and requires less than 20 watts of power. So definitely something to look for as far as laptops, high-power G5 laptops. It really makes you think whether the switch to Intel was worth it with these new PowerPC chips coming out. And, of course, Apple had no comment on this, and it is, as of now, unknown whether it has plans for any of the chips. They did say they'd be releasing some more PowerPC-based Macs before the Intel-based Macs come out. But I'm not sure if those are just going to be sort of incremental upgrades or if they're actually planning to use these new chips that IBM is coming out with, because you can bet that Apple knew these chips were coming out when they did make the switch, because if IBM even had them planned, they probably would have used those as bargaining power to try and keep Apple interested in the PowerPC chip. So Apple probably knew about them, and then the question is whether they were actually planning anything for them. So we'll see. But it definitely opens up the possibility with that the low-power 970FX for a PowerPC G5 PowerBook, something that the Mac community has been waiting for a very long time. Also, now this is a bit of news that may be a little disappointing to many of you, because Monday, July 11th, 2005 was Free Skype Out Day. So it may be a little disappointing, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that missed it. Luckily, I was notified in time, found out about it, and got my 10 free Skype Out minutes that day. The details are at share.skype.com. There's also a link in the show notes to the specific article. This is the first of apparently a series of Skype Out and other Skype-related services giveaways, free days and giveaway days that they're planning to have in the future. And it was definitely nice to get to try Skype Out, because I haven't actually bought any credits on it. So it was nice to just get a couple, and I just did a test calling calling my cell phone and then doing a conversation between my computer and my cell phone. The quality was great, so it was really quite amazing to be talking with a regular phone straight from my computer. So very nice experience there, and you might want to watch share.skype.com. I subscribe to their RSS feed just in case they have another one of these free Skype Out days. Definitely a nice little reward for using Skype. Also, a poll has said that Blu-ray is better than HD DVD, according to consumers. The two rival high-definition DVD standards have been battling it out for several months now, and now it has become apparent that consumers are definitely more interested in the Blu-ray technology. So there was a side-by-side demonstration given to several consumers, which compared the Blu-ray standard to the HD DVD standard. 58% of those consumers, and there were 1,200 consumers in all, 58% of them preferred the Blu-ray standard. 26% of them were undecided, and only 16% preferred HD DVD. So definitely some very conclusive results there. And according to the consumers, their choices, or the reasons their choice was Blu-ray, were better compatibility with more devices, backward compatibility with standard DVDs, and higher disk capacity. So definitely some advantages there for the Blu-ray technology, and some really surprising results. It's always been slightly more advanced than HD DVD, but to see that difference, 58% to 16%, to see that difference in a consumer poll must be really reassuring for the Blu-ray coalition. All right, got some PodSafe music for you. This is from our friend Rob Koslow, and you may remember him from a few shows back. I played his music, and you probably heard it once or twice on the Daily Source Code. But here is another one of his pieces. This is Friend. Thank you. and that is Rob Koslow's friend. So, got a lot of iTunes-related business here to talk about. First thing is a recent project of mine, and that is transferring all my iTunes music from my iBook to the Power Mac desktop. Now, neither computer is very powerful, but the desktop has a whole lot more hard drive space than the iBook. The iBook only has 10 gigabytes, the desktop has 60 gigabytes. So I was running out of space on the iBook. I was down to a couple hundred megabytes, and I figured since my music library is somewhere around 2 gigabytes, I figured better get that out of there. But the interesting part of the story here is the tools I found that that were actually able to make this pretty easy for me. First of all, I've got a complaint and I've got a praise here. Now, I'll start with the praise. I found this program called OurTunes. It's a Java application, and what it does is it finds all of the in-range or on-the-network shared music libraries, the other people that are sharing their iTunes music library over whatever network you happen to be connected to. And it goes out and it finds all the songs on these networks, just as iTunes would do. But then the really amazing part of it is, when you select a song, not only can you play it, but you can download it. So you can actually find other music libraries on the network and download songs from them to your computer just through the regular iTunes sharing option. Now, I'm not sure how this works. It must have something to do with playing it at an accelerated speed or something and then recording it to your hard drive. I have no idea. I mean, obviously, iTunes manages, it isn't just giving a straight audio feed, it's actually streaming the data, but I'm not sure how this program collects the data. It's a Java program, so that means it works on any computer. You probably have to have iTunes installed, though. I'm not completely sure. At least the other people on the network have to have iTunes installed. There's a link in the show notes to this program, and although you could definitely use this for some pretty illegal stuff, it really helped me in transferring the music library. I just basically found my iBook on the network, selected all the songs in its library, and downloaded them to my desktop. And then I could easily import all those into iTunes, and iTunes on my desktop, on the Power Mac, and then all my songs were right there. So it worked great. Definitely a good tool if you're moving computers or upgrading computers, or if you're running out of space on one computer, you have to transfer your library somewhere. Definitely works very well. Now, you could say that a better way to do this is to just take the whole iTunes folder that's on your user folder, and then in music, there's just an iTunes folder where iTunes stores all your music right there. You could say that's a better way, but the problem here was I already had some music on the Power Mac, so there was a few songs in that library that I didn't want to delete. I didn't want to override that library with a new library from my iBook. I just wanted to add some songs to it. So OurTunes worked really well for that. But then there's my complaint, and this has to do with, iTunes in general, really, is that there really was no easy way to transfer or export or mirror somehow the playlists I had set up on the iBook. So I actually ended up recreating the playlist just manually. Obviously, the smart playlists were a little easier to duplicate, but for the standard playlist, the regular playlist, I had to actually go through and select the songs that were in the playlist on the iBook, and one by one select them and then drag them all into the playlist, the mirrored playlist, the new playlist on the Power Mac. So that was a bit tedious. Did take some time to do that, and I wish there was a better way. I haven't found one. So a little good and a little bad as far as the project of transferring a music library there. Now, I did say there'd be multiple iTunes things to talk about here. The second is the iTunes Music Store podcasting section and the traffic I've gotten from that. So far in July, I've gotten 7,357 hits from the iTunes Music Library. Now, I know that because I can see when people who use iTunes, I can see when they visit the site. So I can see how many people are actually getting routed to the site from the iTunes Music Store. It's pretty amazing the amount of people that are flowing through. But just a shout out to the new listeners from iTunes. If any of you are, have gotten to this episode yet, I'm guessing new listeners are probably just going to be bombarded with a ton of stuff they want to subscribe to on in the podcasting directory. But I just wanted to ask any new listeners from iTunes to drop me an email. You don't have to, obviously. But it'd be nice to know if anybody came over in iTunes and what their experience was as far as that and what they think of the podcast. And one final thing here. This concerns my feed, the iTunes Ready feed that I created. I had to modify some of the tags in my RSS feed to work with iTunes. Unfortunately, even with those new modifications to the feed, the iTunes Music Store still hasn't updated my album art, all my metadata, all that. It still hasn't updated that for my entry in the directory. So that's not reassuring. I've actually taken a look at some of the other podcast feeds that are included in the directory and do have album art and metadata and all that. And I've tried to make some modifications in my feed to better reflect the feeds that are actually displaying all that data and look great in the music store. So hopefully that'll help, and we'll see if it updates. I'm not sure how often they update the store, but it's definitely taking a while for my feed. And next up, I've got a product review for you. This is a first, actually. I've sort of done casual product reviews in the past, but this is something that that I just got and really am liking. It's the Panasonic DMR ES10. There's a link in the show notes to the description of the product. It's a DVD recorder, so it records DVDs in real time and basically acts like a VCR for DVDs. So there's a couple of uses for this, and a couple things I found really interesting about it. The first is the fact that it can convert regular old tapes and tapes that you would record in a Hi8 or a Digital 8 camera. It can convert those to DVD. So I actually plugged in my video camera and was able to convert all of the tapes that I had for the camera. I was able to convert those straight into DVD. I've tried before editing together some of the footage from that, but obviously when you're using a computer, it takes, real time to record it into the computer, and then editing time if you want to edit, and then it takes burning time, and then it takes encoding time before the burning, which can be hours. So I was really liking this, the fact that this DVD recorder just records in real time and then takes about 4 minutes to actually encode and finalize, they call it, the DVD. So it's right there. It's great. So I'm really happy with that and really getting a lot of use out of it. The other thing I found really interesting about it and really useful is the fact that it's basically a 4.7 gigabyte DVR, digital video recorder. You can set it to record different shows at different times, and you can delete them when you're finished watching them, and it can record, I think, 8 hours on the lowest quality setting. So it's pretty useful that way, too. Not as useful as it's the main purpose I've found for it, which is converting VHS and Hi8 and Digital 8, converting those to DVD. But it's still useful as sort of a VCR-type thing for DVDs, just for recording right off the air. Anyway, I'm pretty happy with it, and just thought I'd share my opinion on that product, the Panasonic DMR-ES10. Really getting a lot of use out of it, and something I'd recommend. It's the Everything Digital Podcast Pick of the Week. Yeah, it's the hardware pick of the week. But anyway, that aside, that's all I got for today. Here's some outro music. This is from GarageBand.com, of course. This is Dan Heyer, Proverbial Nod. So you can post comments, as always, at the website at everythingdigital.org. You can subscribe to the podcast-only feed and just receive the actual MP3 audio shows. You can subscribe to that feed at everythingdigital.org/rss.xml. Although, if you want both podcasts and text news, the news that I put up on the site, that feed is everythingdigital.org/weblog/index.xml. You can email me at alan@everythingdigital.org. You can Skype me. My ID is everythingdigital. You can AOL Instant Messenger IM me. My screen name is Podcaster. And you can call me 206-9-THE-EDP or 206-984-3337. Although you're not actually calling me, you're calling my voicemail hotline where you can leave an audio comment. Also, I am, as always, open to sponsorships. It is $10 to sponsor one show, or depending on the number of bidders that week, the person that has the highest bid at the by the time the show is published, that person will get the sponsorship. All right, other than that, thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.